comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. We have a special broadcast coming up on Saturday morning. That's in the morning, April the 16th, in the members area. Now, we do special broadcasts in the members area from time to time. It happens that we did one last week, and it happens that we're doing one this week. We don't do one every week. I wish we could, but at this point, we can't do that every week. But as often as possible, we do. And it's one of the benefits of being a member. Now, we're going to be showing you a film that is really, in my opinion, blockbuster. You've heard of Dr. John Mack, and I think everybody knows the phenomenal work that Dr. John Mack was doing, working with people who were experiencers, people who had had contact with extraterrestrials. And he really shook up the academic world. He shook up the world of psychiatry when he, as an eminent Harvard professor of psychiatry, said, you know what, these folks are not lying and they're not crazy. Something's actually happened here. Well, if you have any interest at all in the real information behind the work of Dr. John Mack, you want to see this film. And you have to be a member to do it. It takes 23 cents a day to be a member. That's $6.95 for the month. And you get all of the benefits then. You get your own profile page, your own blog, your own photo gallery, your friends page, forums, chat, video galaxy where you can watch videos that we've uploaded, the free ebook library, lots of stuff, and private messaging. Probably you'll never find another value quite so high as the value of being a member of the Kevin Smith Show. So I hope you'll join us this evening. Tonight is K-Files night, and that means that following the show tonight, we begin sending out this week's edition of our free weekly newsletter called the K-Files. And if you're not subscribed, be sure you subscribe right now. Just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe. You get a confirmation email with a link you need to click in order to activate your subscription, and you're good to go. How about that? We are open line live tonight, and that means, ladies and gentlemen, that, and it's BYOT, bring your own topic, that means that after I throw a few things out on the table, just to sort of prime the pump, if you will, then we'll open the telephone lines and we'll talk about whatever you wish to talk about, whatever topic is on your mind that is within our genre. And our genre is pretty broad. It's the world of the strange and unexplained. Some people call it paranormal, but it also includes futuristic science, space exploration, UFOs, extraterrestrials, and stuff like that. We'll be back right after this. right at the beginning of every show, you hear me say, this is the show where you matter. And people who have been listening for some time know that that's not a cliche. They know that's for real. New listeners sometimes probably get the impression, oh, that's just something they say at the beginning of the show. But it is absolutely the truth. This show is very much a cooperative effort between you and me. Each and every night, yes, I sit here and talk at the microphone. And each and every night, you listen. And when we have the telephone lines open, you call in and you talk to me. But there's a whole lot that goes on behind the scenes where it's a cooperative effort. Because each and every day I get email from people, people just like you. Maybe you sent me one today. And people send me suggestions of things to look at, you know. They send me a link to an article somewhere. They send me a link to a video or to some photographs. They send me a suggestion that says you really ought to consider having this person on the show. Really, I think this person would be a good guest. And they give me a link to that person's site, and I go check it out. And you know, if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you know that to the extent that I am able to get those guests scheduled that you suggest, with rare exceptions, sometimes somebody has suggested that I don't go for, but it's pretty rare. And to the extent that we can get them scheduled, your suggestions show up as shows right here. Sterling Allen is a good example last night. In fact, every show this week so far has been someone that you suggested. Someone in the audience sent me a suggestion with a link, and so I checked it out, and they became shows. It is very much a cooperative effort, and I really, really do depend upon you and your emails and your comments. Now, we do have it, you know, on our contact page, we do have it separated into listener comments and suggestions. And that's because I get so much email, I have to have them separated like that. They go to separate mailboxes. So when I'm reading comments, I don't look at links. If somebody puts a link in there as a suggestion and they list it as a listener comment, it's not because I'm trying to be hard about this. It's because I want to answer, I want to reply to as many of those listener comments as I can get to. Okay? And then whenever I go over to the suggestion box, I click the links, I check it out, I look at it, and if someone sends me a listener comment but they send it to suggestions, I don't reply to it over there. Okay, I have to divide things and categorize things so that I can get to all of it. But, and sometimes people get upset with that and they say, well, I don't see why I have to click suggestion. If I send it to listener comment, you say you get it. I get it, but I don't click the link. And I don't, out of courtesy to all of the others who sent listener comments, okay? So be sure you use the right button there. If you're sending me a suggestion, click suggestion. If you're sending a comment, click comments, okay? Now, having said that, I got some pretty interesting photographs from a link that was sent to me this week, and I want to share those with you. I've never seen these before. Now, these are from, oh, and by the way, if you're listening to the show, I'm glad you are. You need to know that tonight is free night. You can watch for free by coming over to kevinsmithshow.com, and it's really not hard to figure out how to watch for free since it's the most gigantic link on that page. Okay, you just click where it says watch free tonight. All right. Now, the photograph that I have put up on our television channel for people who are watching. This photograph is from the Russian Luna missions. Now, I don't know which Luna mission this is from. And no, that's not misspelled. It's not supposed to be lunar. It is Luna. That's the name of that ball out there in the sky. It is called Luna. The name of the ball you're sitting on right now is called Terra. In Latin, those are the names for the Earth and the Moon. So this is Terra, and that out there in the sky is Luna. And they did several missions where they sent probes over to Luna. This is one of the Luna pictures. It is an amazing object laying on the surface of Luna, laying on the surface of the Moon. It appears to be three disks. Now, it doesn't appear to be disks. They are disks. It appears that there are three, but because we cannot see what's beyond that top one, there could be a fourth one over there that we don't see. But there are three disks with an axle through them on the Moon. What do you think about that? Pretty weird, huh? Three, looks like big stone wheels is what it looks like. And it's got an axle through the middle. I don't really think that is a geological anomaly. I really think that what we're looking at there is three disks with an axle. Now, I cannot explain how they got there. I don't know who built them. I don't know who left them there. I don't know what they were used for, but there they are. This one, the picture that I'm putting up now is from Luna 9. And that looks like some kind of building, some kind of facility on top of sort of a flattened, in English we would say mesa, sort of a the top of an outcropping of rock that's been flattened for the purpose, and it looks like some kind of a facility there. And we can see what looks like some kind of a building. All right, now, I've got some more pictures to share with you, and they are not from the Moon. But I want to throw this out onto the table because of two reasons. You've heard me say that when, and I've written it in a book, I've said it on the radio, so this is no secret. You've heard me say that if I show you a picture that has buildings and stuff in it, and I don't tell you where it's from, and say it's a black and white picture, so you assume, as I show it to you, that it's Earth. You just assume that. And I just show you the picture, and I say, what is that? And you say, well, it looks like an aerial view of a city. Looks like, you know, an aerial view of some skyscrapers, and, you know, maybe a satellite picture of that. And then if I tell you, okay, that's not on Earth, that's on Mars, immediately a great portion of the population says, oh, well, then it can't be a city. That's got to be some kind of, you know, trick of lighting, or it's got to be some sort of, you know, those are, it's a geographical anomaly. If we see it and we don't know it's on Mars, we immediately identify it as buildings. If we see it and we know it's on Mars, many people, probably most people, immediately say, yeah, it can't be a city. It's got, you know, that's some kind of trick of lighting. Or you photoshopped that. Okay, I'm going to tell you something. Are you ready for this? Bunk. Now, photoshopping gets done, but not just by people trying to hoax stuff. that's on Mars trying to, you know, there are hoaxers out there, and it gets done. It gets done by NASA, too. But I'm going to show you an example of what I'm talking about. The first picture that I'm putting up here, I just went to a site that deals with aerial archaeology. And if I had not put the title up on this picture, you would assume that must be Mars, but it's some kind of geographical anomaly. And that's because the dirt is kind of reddish, but it's right here on Earth. As a matter of fact, Mars is no more red than the red dirt that's on this planet, and there are places on Mars that are not red at all. And by the way, it does not have a red sky like all those pictures that NASA has given us down through the years. It has a blue sky. But what we're looking at is a photograph of a field, and it's taken from the air. It was taken in 1979. And from the ground, you cannot see this, but from the air, you can see the outline of a massive, it says Gallo-Roman Villa Rustica. This is the outline of a big Gallo-Roman villa. Big, really big. This is a big house. But it's very ancient. It's underground. It's under, I believe it says about, I think it's under, the tops of these walls, I think, are underground about 3 feet. Now, you cannot see this from ground level, but if you get in the airplane and fly over it, you can see this. Now, every archaeologist on the planet who sees this would say, oh, well, that's the outline of a buried building. That's some ancient ruins there. That's an outline of a buried building. And I think most of the people who are watching tonight, and I hope you are, because it doesn't cost you anything to watch it tonight, I think as soon as I put that picture up, you said the same thing. That's the outline of a buried building. Now, the instant, and look, you wouldn't look at this and say, that's some kind of geological anomaly. And you wouldn't, because you can see that it's very rectilinear. We see rectangles all in this. Okay, now I'm going to show you one on Mars. Now, it's covered with a bit more sand, but we see the outline of a big rectangle. Within it, we can see some other features that suggest that there are probably other rectangles within this one, in other words, rooms. Now, if I had shown this black and white photograph without telling anybody that it was on Mars, if I had said, you know, this is an aerial photograph from the Gobi Desert, what do you think we're looking at? Just about everyone would look at this and say, well, it looks like there's some kind of a buried walled area there, like, you know, maybe there's a buried civilization there, or a buried settlement of some kind, and there's this rectangular wall buried under the sand. However, when you put them side by side, and you can see when you put them side by side, they are actually very similar. You put them side by side, the experts will say the one on Earth, oh, it's a great archaeological find. But when it comes to the one over there from Mars, they say, well, that's got to be a geological anomaly. And my question is, just how stupid do they really think we are? I mean, that's insulting. That's just insulting. It insults the most modest of intelligence, because it presumes that because there are none of us living on Mars now, no humans living on Mars, it presumes that there never have been, and it presumes that whatever the conditions are there now, they've always been that, and it presumes that there's never been any intelligent life on that planet. Now, that's some pretty big presuming, and it's pretty stupid. It really is. Now, let me explain why that's pretty stupid. When you go out looking for life, are you looking for life out there in the galaxy, in the universe? Are you looking for life, or are you looking for us? And you've heard me contend that mostly what NASA does is they go look for us. Now, life, scientists say, life happens. If it does, it happens within the context of its location. So if they're correct that life happens, it happens within the context of its location. There, life happens at the bottom, at the deepest parts of our oceans, in conditions that will absolutely kill you graveyard dead. You can't exist there, and yet there are living things there thriving. The same sort, using that as an analogy, the same sort of thing could be the case on every planet, asteroid, comet. There could be life within the context of that environment. Doesn't look like us. It isn't us. And maybe you can't go live on the surface of Mars. But does that mean there could not be life that can live in those conditions? Now, I have a lot more to say about life on Mars, and I'll say it when we come back in response to another couple of emails that I've got from a couple of listeners based on things I said about Mars last week and then earlier this week. But if life happens, folks, it's going to happen within the context of its environment, so that if it happens on the surface of Earth, it's going to need oxygen, nitrogen, water, because that's what's out here on the surface of the Earth. Those are the building blocks from which life arose, part of the building blocks from which life arose out here on the surface. Deep within the Earth, we have forms of life that are allergic to oxygen and die if you expose them to it. But there they are, living in the Earth with no oxygen. We'll be back right after this. Okay, just a couple of more things I want to throw onto the table, and then we will open up the telephone lines, because it is open line live tonight, and we will get to the telephones here in just a moment. I've made many statements over the years about conditions on Mars, and I did a show last week where I focused on that a little bit. Part of the show focused on that. If you were listening last week, or if you were watching, you'll remember the show. I believe it was Friday night last week, where I talked about some real experts and what they say about what's going on out there in space. Mars being one example. I played for you at that time a recording of Dr. Harold Klein, who was the director of the Life Sciences Division at Ames Research Center, and he was also the chief biologist on the Viking lander mission in 1976. And I played for you a recording of him talking about the fact that when they tested the little scoop of dirt that they scooped up off the surface of Mars, that it gave off 15 times more oxygen than they could account for from all known sources. And I made the statement that the conditions on Mars are very different from what we get told. Now, I got one really scorching email about that. And then I got one that, from one of our regular listeners. It was very polite, very nice, but disagreed with me. And of course, that's fine. But he felt that my statements were misleading. Now, he went on to explain that he's not saying that I intentionally misled people, but that my statements were misleading. The result of it was that it was misleading people. And, he referred to past shows sort of in a one lump sum kind of statement where he says when you talk about that there's a thick atmosphere on Mars and Earth-like conditions and there's trees. And now here's what happens. I sent my explanation to this person, and I certainly thank him for the email, and I thank him for stating his case. I really do. I mean that. And I want you to do that when you have a disagreement with me. I want you to tell me and tell me why. I'm not always right. And I know that. But if you point out to me where I've said something that's wrong, once I research and find out that, yes, I was wrong, those of you who have listened for a long time know that I will come back on this show and say, I misspoke. But I've never said that there are Earth-like conditions on Mars. What happens is when I say something that is so challenging to the current paradigm, and I do that often, I say something that smacks them right between the eyes, and it hits hard, which I do that often. Sometimes it so shakes people up that they extrapolate from that what they think I was saying between the lines. Now, if you listen to this show for any length of time, you should know I don't speak between the lines. If I say A, I don't mean A plus. If I say A, I don't mean A minus. And I darn sure don't mean B. Okay? I don't speak between the lines. I don't do that fuzzy politico speak that everyone has gotten used to in the fuzzy, out of focus version of America in which we live today. If I say A, I just mean A. I don't mean A plus or A minus. And so if you take what I say and you read between the lines, well, then that means blah, 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 blah. No, it means A. That's all it means. Okay? And that, but it happens. I get email every day in which that has happened. Okay? Now, I've never, ever said that Mars has Earth-like conditions. I don't contend that it does. I have said that the conditions on Mars are not what NASA tells us officially. And their own evidence proves it. Give you a quick example, then we'll move on to something I want to show you. Mars, NASA had a program where they were going to fly a plane on Mars. Okay, unmanned, of course. They were going to fly this airplane on Mars. You, if you've watched this show for a long time, remember the show where I showed you the pictures of it, because they actually designed the thing. They built it. It wasn't just a theory that they were talking about. This program was funded. It was funded. And they built the prototype, and they test flew the prototype, and they were going to send it to Mars, and they were going to fly this plane on Mars. Now, look, physics is physics. Aerodynamics is aerodynamics. What it takes to keep that plane aloft, it takes to keep that plane aloft. And if the air pressure and the density of the atmosphere on Mars is what they say, do the calculations, that airplane could not fly on Mars if the conditions are as they say. On Mars, that airplane would weigh roughly 50% of its weight here on Earth. That means it needs roughly 50% of the air density in order to have the lift that it's going to take to keep it aloft. Just do the math. But they tell us that the air density on Mars, the atmosphere density, is so, so thin that you can't even have liquid water at the surface. But they were going to fly an airplane. Instead, as they went through some budget cuts, they had to make some changes, and they canceled the deployment of that airplane and instead put a communications satellite around Mars. Communications satellite at Mars? Yep, they did. All right. The conditions on Mars are not Earth-like. They're also not NASA-like. The conditions on Mars are not like what NASA has been telling us. If they were going to fly an airplane, they know that atmosphere is much thicker. Their own photographs show that there is liquid water at the surface. Now, there are people out there that have pictures on the internet, NASA pictures, where they say that's a lake. I can tell you, as I have said on the air, it looks like a lake. There are people that have pictures out there on the internet that have, in those pictures, NASA photographs, what looks like a big pine forest, pine trees. That's what it looks like. And there are people that will say, those are pine trees growing on Mars. What I have said is those sure look like pine trees. There's a world of difference, isn't there, between saying that's what it looks like and saying that's what it is. There's a world of difference in that. When I say A, I don't mean A plus, and I don't mean A minus. I mean A, all right, and only A. So do I contend that you could fly over to Mars and pitch a tent and camp out? No, I don't. Never have. Do I contend that there's enough oxygen in the soil that you could carry some type of converter, some type of generator to extract that oxygen out of the soil for a colony living on Mars? Yeah, I contend that. I sure do. And Viking Lander showed that, and so did the Phoenix Polar Lander. It showed that when you burn the dirt on Mars, you get a big spike of oxygen. So yeah, I contend that there's oxygen to be had on Mars. I don't contend that you could go out on the surface of Mars in your shirt sleeves. But I do contend that what we've been told officially about Mars is not true. And their own evidence is why I say it's not true. So, could there be life on Mars right now? Yeah. And I think there is, and NASA found it. Does that mean that they're human? Does it mean that they are intelligent? I can't go that far. Haven't gone that far. Life? Yes. Look, the Viking lander showed that there were biological processes taking place. It didn't show what kind of creatures are causing the biological processes. But NASA has the evidence that there were biological processes taking place on Mars. And they overruled it. But they've got the evidence, and I'm convinced there are biological processes taking place on Mars. There is life of some kind on Mars. Now, one more thing, and I want to show you this, and I need to get right to this, because if I don't do this, the next break is going to take over, and you won't get to see it. Here at the Kevin Smith Show on our TV channel, one of the ads that we run, it's not an ad, we don't do commercial ads, but one of the spots that we run shows the International Space Station and a string of lights out there in space behind the International Space Station. And it says, you know, it's a little joke. It says, some people think that this is proof that NASA's been, you know, they've filmed UFOs in space. And then it says, but the PTB Information Service, that's Powers That Be Information Service, has investigated this and has determined that this is really a squadron from the Maryland Air National Guard dropping flares. They just got a little off course, and that accounts for them being close to the space station. And it's just a spoof. It's a joke based on the nonsense that they put out about the Phoenix Lights. I want to show that to you because I've gotten some emails saying, well, you know, that picture, somebody could have photoshopped that. That might not be real. No. That's not a picture. That is live video that was captured. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it up on the screen here, and you can watch it. What it starts out just like we do when we show it during a commercial break. But then I zoom in on that line of lights, and you just watch. You'll see one blink out, and you'll see another one blink out and blink back in. That's not a photoshopped photograph. That's live streaming video from the space station that got captured. Well, I talked too long. We'll have to do it when we come back from break. I apologize for that. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and I'm going to show you the video now of that string of lights behind the International Space Station. Now, this was, I forget the date on this, but it was this year, 2011, and this was a live feed. It was on NASA's live feed. Someone captured it. You can find this on YouTube. Somebody captured this and put it up on YouTube. You're going to see, this is not something that's been, it's not a picture where somebody's photoshopped in some lights. You're going to see the lights fade away. One of them fades away. Another one kind of fades out and comes back. But what we're going to do, I'm going to show you what, this is actually the spot that we play. And what I've done, though, is I start out with it, it's just the spot. And then I zoom in. It's me doing the zooming, not NASA. They don't zoom in. In fact, if you watch that whole video on YouTube, NASA finally has the people on the space station dip the camera down so that you can't see these lights. After a little while, they come back up, and it's like checking to see if the lights are still there, and they are. And then they dip it down again because they don't want the public to see these lights, right? So anyway, here we go. And, okay, February the 3rd. So it's not that long ago, February the 3rd, 2011, 8:30 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time. And this is what people are seeing on our TV channel. I hope you're watching because it's free tonight, is the way the spot starts. In a moment, it's going to zoom in. There we go. We're zooming in on those lights. Now, there's a big gap right in the middle of the, kind of the middle of the screen. Look, keep your eyes on that gap, and you're going to see the light on the right of that gap fade away. There it goes. It's fading away. It's gone. All right. Now, on the left of that gap, that one's beginning to fade away, and it'll almost fade away. It's gone. Now it's fading back in. This is live streaming video, captured live streaming video from the International Space Station. It was being put out by NASA on their live streaming video channel. And that one on the left kind of fades away. And then it comes back, and it sort of fades away, and it comes back. And I could have zoomed in on some others along that line that are doing the same kind of thing. But I thought those two would give you a good example of what's going on there. If you watch the whole video, as I said, the one that's on YouTube, what you'll find is the camera dips down to get this line of lights out of your view. After a little while, it comes back up, sort of checking, I think, to see if they're still there. Yep, they're still there, and it dips down again. So this is video. This is not a still shot. This is video, and it was broadcast live by NASA. That's pretty impressive. That line of lights, and I'm going to play just the beginning of that again. And if you're watching, I want you to look at how far that line of lights expands from left to right. I mean, that's a bunch of lights out there. And there is some kind of structure beyond the space station all the way over to the left. We can't see what that is, but it looks pretty big. All right. Now, what I want to do is open up the telephone lines. I've thrown a bunch of stuff on the table. We don't have to talk about any of that. We can. If you want to talk about any of the stuff that I've thrown out on the table, we can do that. If you don't want to, if you've got something else on your mind that you would like for us to talk about this evening, we can do that. Okay, it's BYOT, bring your own topic, and as long as it's within the genre of the strange and unexplained, we certainly can do that, all right? The telephone numbers are as follows. The main telephone number here in the studio is 623-444-5889. We have a toll-free number, 888-223-4599. That works in Canada and the USA. We also have, for those of you not in Canada, not in the USA, you can call the main number, or you can, since I don't have a toll-free number outside of Canada and the USA, you can use our flash message feature on the website. Just go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and to the right, on the right of that, you'll see the link that says flash message. We also have our first-time caller line tonight. It is 623-237-3814. To the telephones. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Scott.
Hello, Scott.
In Los Angeles.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. What's on your mind?
I wanted to make some comments about this whole air density thing on Mars and this you know, flying an aircraft on Mars that you were talking about.
Okay, good enough.
First of all, I don't see anything at all that shows that NASA is saying, or that there's anything different from what NASA is saying. You have to keep in mind that when you're flying an aircraft, and by the way, I'm an instrument-rated private pilot.
Okay.
So I have some knowledge about aerodynamics.
I also was a private pilot, so I do too. Go ahead.
Okay. There are a number of things that... let me back off and just say that you mentioned the air density on Mars. And you said that, I think you said something about 50% of the weight or something like that.
The gravity on Mars is roughly 50% of what the gravity on Earth is. So on Mars, you would weigh roughly 50% of what you weigh here.
Okay. I will not argue that point.
However, well, that's from NASA's site, so.
And I will not argue that point because it's basically irrelevant.
Okay.
But there are a number of things that determine the lift that an aircraft will have, and one of those things is the of course there's the density of the air. There is the surface area of the wing.
Mm-hmm.
There is the shape of the wing.
Mm-hmm.
There is the speed of the aircraft, in other words, the speed of the airflow over the wing,
mm-hmm.
and there is the angle of attack of the wing.
That is correct. That is correct. And that
all those things can be taken into account to build a wing that will, in fact, fly in an atmosphere that is as thin as what NASA claims on Mars. And, in fact, NASA has tested an aircraft that has flown at over 100,000 feet here on Earth, where the density of the atmosphere is the same as it is on Mars. And so there is really nothing about the fact that they said that they were going to be, you know, funding a project where they could fly an aircraft on Mars that would show that anything is different at all than, you know, what they've already claimed.
You obviously have not seen the prototype, nor read their plans.
Actually, I have, Kevin.
Because have you?
In fact, about a year ago or so, I sent you an email about that with links to it.
The prototype, it's a blue and white prototype, and I think it's Boeing's that they actually did a test flight. I want you to hang on. Can you hang on through the break?
Sure.
Yeah, hang on. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and it is Open Line Live. We have on the telephone with us Scott from California, and Scott is making a good case against what I said about this airplane that was supposed to have been flown on Mars. Scott, everything you said was essentially accurate. Well, it was accurate, but there's more to the story. Let me just check. Are you still with me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm not an expert at these things, so before I write about it or before I get on the air and say something about it, I usually have somebody check it out. And I had three different commercial airline pilots and one military pilot run the math based on what NASA has published on their website about conditions on Mars. they all came to the conclusion that it was not possible. That the only possible way you could do it is you could fly a rocket. Because based on the information provided by the NASA website about the conditions on Mars, the density of the atmosphere in proportion to the gravity, and then the amount of oxygen they say that's in the atmosphere at the surface, which they say is less than 1%, it's 0.7% at the surface. So as you rise from the surface headed upward, as you gain altitude, you have less and less oxygen. That there's absolutely no way a prop plane could fly, and there is absolutely no way that you could have a jet that could fly, based on both the density of the atmosphere, the gravity, and the lack of oxygen. And so they told me that the only way they could see it could be done is if you used a rocket that had its own self-contained source of oxygen for burning fuel. The issue of the angle of attack. You would have to have the attitude of the airplane at something greater than 45 degrees, or you would have to have flaps set to 45 degrees or above to grab enough of that atmosphere to get any kind of lift. And by the way, for our audience, the attitude, not the altitude. The attitude means dragging the tail so the nose is way up. Okay, you'd have to set it so that the attitude was in such a position that the tail was dragging. That's what they told me. And it's what I suspected, but it is what they told me. You have to have some kind of thrust great enough to create enough friction, or airflow is another term, in order to get that lift. And with the density as it is, the only way, and with the gravity as it is, the only way it could be done, according to these gentlemen, was if you used a rocket.
Okay, well, first of all, you've confused a few terms here. You've kind of confused drag and lift.
No. You have to have something for those wings flowing over those wings in order to get lift under those wings.
Yes, you have to have airflow going over the wings.
That's right. And now, when you employ the flaps, or if you, I used a term that the audience would understand rather than an aeronautical term. When you drag the tail, you've now set the wings against at a new angle against the airflow.
Okay, Kevin, you're missing a few things. First of all, it isn't just those things. There's also the surface area of the wing. You also have to remember that because the gravity is lighter, you need less lift to lift the aircraft.
No, you don't. You're missing something.
Also,
No, wait a minute. We're not going to move off of that point yet. The aircraft weighs 50% of what it would weigh here on Earth, roughly 50%. But in order for that aircraft to perform as it did here on Earth, the air density and the thrust also have to be proportionate. They have to be 50% of what it experienced here on Earth.
Kevin, look, 50% or not doesn't really matter, because you can offset those things with a greater surface area. Okay. You can also, like you mentioned, the shape of the wing, which is what the flaps end up doing, which you can control it.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I will agree on is the lack of oxygen in the atmosphere. However, there are other ways to propel besides consuming oxygen from the atmosphere. I mean, you can have an electrically powered prop, although a prop itself probably isn't the way to go anyway, because the atmosphere is so thin, and it depends on the amount of speed that you need in order to get the airplane flying through the air. With a large enough wing, you don't need to go very fast. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of issues here that need to be looked at. But
have you seen the prototype?
Goes against what NASA has said. If you go to their website and look at the facts that they're presenting, there's absolutely...
I did. That's where I got it from. That's where I got it from, and I presented it to professional pilots, and those pilots did the math and said, can't be done. And that may, in fact, be why NASA dropped the program, but no, it can't be done. Not with the data that NASA publishes on their website about the conditions on Mars. The point is this. I believe you can fly that aircraft on Mars because those conditions...
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yes, but I believe you can fly it because what they're publishing about the conditions on Mars is not correct. The air density on Mars has to be greater than what they're saying.
I don't think you presented any evidence either.
I'm sorry?
I said I don't see any evidence that that's the case, and I don't think you've presented any evidence.
Oh, I most definitely have. Most definitely have. If you do the math based on what they publish, you can't fly that aircraft. You could put a rocket engine on it, but you couldn't fly that aircraft without it.
It's been tested, Kevin.
Not on Mars.
It's been tested in an equivalent environment, you know, of air density.
With what kind of propulsion?
I'm sorry?
What kind of propulsion?
I can't remember. It's been a
while. Well, I can. It was dropped, and all it did was glide. And yes, you could do that, and it would glide very rapidly to the ground. But with a propulsion system to keep it aloft, that hasn't been tested. The prototype was a glider.
I believe that's correct. It is not. I believe that's correct.
The prototype was a glider. The prototype had no propulsion system on it. It was dropped.
I believe that's correct. And it, mm-hmm. as I recall, it stayed aloft at 100,000 feet or so for quite a while. I can't remember the details of it now. It's been so long. But the reality is that the physics of it does show that you can in fact fly an airplane in that density with a properly designed wing.
With the prototype, it can only drop.
To propel it, that's fine too. It will fly.
With the prototype, no propulsion. You could drop it out of the spacecraft as the spacecraft is headed down towards Mars. And for a few minutes, it will glide towards the ground. But it'll be a very rapid glide towards the ground, just as the prototype very rapidly was gliding down to denser atmosphere here on Earth. Okay, now when it hit denser atmosphere, that gave it more lift.
Well, again, Kevin, with the atmosphere that is claimed, the aircraft will fly, and you know, with a suitable propulsion system, it will continue to fly. And if you need a solid fuel rocket to give it propulsion or whatever means you use, it doesn't have to be going that fast because with a properly designed wing, it will fly in that atmosphere.
Okay, you keep saying with a properly designed wing. And that gives the impression.
Which NASA has shown.
All right, wait a minute. I'm talking now. Whoa. I'm talking. With a properly designed wing. But I'm talking about the wing they did design. With the wing they
That's
did design, it's not at a. It doesn't have a sharp attack angle.
You don't need a sharp attack angle, Kevin. You can have a. If you have an aircraft with enough. A wing with enough surface area with a proper shape, angle of attack is only one of those.
And again, you're speaking theoretically, where I'm talking about the actual one. The actual one was about maybe 6 feet across.
Kevin, I'm talking about the prototype, too, that they tested and that it met all of the expectations that were in an atmosphere that was similar to the density of Mars. So, you know, it does fly. It will fly.
Well, you have your opinion. I've got mine, and I've got the opinion of the commercial airline pilot I talked to, and the military pilot I talked to, who said can't be done. So you have your opinion. I've got mine.
NASA says it can be done, and you've got some people who aren't NASA scientists who are saying that it can't be done. But I'm sorry, from what I've seen, NASA's correct. They actually tested it, and yes, it does fly.
They actually tested it on Earth without propulsion as a glider, and yes, it did.
It flew according to the specifications that they laid out for a density of the Mars atmosphere.
It did fall through the atmosphere. It did fall through the atmosphere to denser atmosphere and then stayed aloft. As it would do on Mars, except it would not be falling into much denser atmosphere, and it wouldn't stay aloft for very long. And, you'd have to drop it from a great height. But I want to thank you for your call. I think you've had a chance to make your case. I've made my case. The same NASA you believe in is the same ones that have been painting out stuff on those pictures from the moon, too. What do you think about that?
Kevin, I'm not going to even go into that.
Okay, I will, though, and I thank you for the call. It is the same NASA that doctors the photographs. It is the same NASA that sent you pictures of Mars for years that had the sky painted red and the dirt crimson. And then, oops, in a live press conference with photographs coming back from Spirit and Opportunity. There was that blue sky. There was that ground that just looked like sand. Wasn't very red at all. Yeah, that's the same NASA. I'm for NASA, but I'm for NASA getting things straight, telling us the truth. I want their budget to be doubled. And I want them to start telling us the truth, and I want them at that point, when they get their budget doubled, I want them to have a meeting and say, okay, guys, I want Congress to have a meeting with the NASA administrators and say, guys, get on with it. Let's get this thing done. Get out there and really do some exploration of space. Now, they do some great stuff. NASA really does do some great stuff. Do they doctor photographs? Yeah, that's easy to see. You just go to their website, download some of the photographs, especially from the moon, and you'll see it for yourself. On some of those photographs, yeah, they've been airbrushed. Not too much question about that. But I want NASA to be vibrant and vigorous. I want them out there exploring and finding out new things about our solar system and about our galaxy. And there are a lot of things they do that are much in line with that. A lot of things. And I'm for them. But some of the stuff that they give us is pretty demonstrably flawed, in my opinion. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
I was just listening to what Scott basically was saying, and I think...
Wait a minute. Whoa. You were going to say something about what? Who was saying?
Was it Scott, the previous caller?
Scott. Yeah, Scott.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. I think it's a case where both of you are correct in your own way. I have limited knowledge, I mean, just from what I understand about airlift on a wing, that if you had the right design, you could fly a wing almost any place if you had the right design for the flow going over it and under it at a different speed, which causes the lift. But the point that I think Scott didn't realize is you actually were talking about the protocol that they had developed that didn't really have a special wing design. So,
well, no, it look, let me explain this. It did. It had a special wing design, but this was not a big, you didn't have a massive wing area, and there was no propulsion system on it. What I'm saying is that based on the NASA program originally called for a prop-driven aircraft. And their own design shows, if you look at the artist's conceptions of their own design, before the prototype was built, it shows what's called a pusher prop, and that is a prop, a propeller, in the back, pushing the craft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They pretty much figured out that wasn't going to work. And so they were looking at jets, and they even, before they scrapped the program, got down to, well, we might need to use rockets. Now, I think the airplane can fly on Mars, but you can't do it without, you're going to have either one of two things is true. Either you're going to have a rocket to fly. You have to have a rocket engine. That way, you're pushing it fast enough that it gets enough airflow over the wings. Or, if that's not the case, then that plane, as designed, could only fly on Mars if the data they're giving us about the conditions is not correct. If the atmosphere is denser than what they're telling us. Now, we do have, I think, proof that the atmosphere is denser. I'm not saying it's Earth-like, but it is denser than what they're telling us because we do have those water drops that formed on the leg of the Phoenix lander. One person said, well, yeah, but certain salts can make that happen. But NASA said it can't happen. They said the atmosphere is too thin for water. Okay, salt or no salt? And so when you do have water drops, even if they're loaded with salts, obviously it's more dense than what they've told us because they said it was impossible. So that's my point. My point is not that Mars is, you know, Earth-like and you could go there and survive in shirt sleeves. That's not what I'm saying. I don't think it's that way at all. I'm saying it's not. I'm saying that the data they've given us isn't accurate.
I would agree. Like I said, I agree with both of you. I was hoping you'd bring up the point to Scott that they did find water on the surface, and that would have been proof right there that the density is different from what they are actually claiming, which they knew that is why that airplane would fly, because the atmosphere is different.
Yeah, but now, having said that, I'm going to play the devil's advocate against myself, okay?
Okay.
Mars does not have a magnetic field around it like we do. But there are bands of magnetism. If you think like a zebra, you know, he's got bands of white, bands of black. There are strands, bands of magnetism on Mars, where if you happen to be in that particular spot, there is some small magnetic field around you, Okay? Mm-hmm. What if there's some kind of weird something like that with the atmosphere on Mars? So that at one spot you have air density that is much greater than the air density would be 10 miles away. What if that's the case? I don't know. I'm just playing the devil's advocate. It's that way with magnetism. Maybe there's some kind of weird something with the atmospheric pressure on Mars as well.
Well, I guess we'll never know for sure. NASA doesn't seem to come up with, like you said, straight answers. But I did want to go. I did want to move off this subject and
okay.
talk about one of the guests you had last week, which
okay.
was Sean David Morton, I believe.
Uh-huh.
I find him very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And
very, very interesting, but very controversial too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I seem to recall was. Didn't he have some kind of controversy or something a couple years ago? Was on the internet. I'm not sure if it had to what. I'm not sure exactly what it had to do with. But I seem to recall there was some kind of controversy.
Yeah, there was. There was. There may have been more than this. I don't know. But the controversy I'm familiar with. Is that the Federal Securities Exchange Commission said that he had violated some kind of rules with them or something, and they were saying that he had acted fraudulently, and I think that he was able to... prove that wasn't the case and avoided criminal prosecution and conviction. I think, but I don't know all the details. Yeah, that's true.
I used to subscribe to his newsletter,
mm-hmm.
and I found it quite interesting. And then I found out that he was like pushing stocks. That this would relate to what you were just saying. That he was pushing, he had a stock fund or something into metals and stuff, which probably wouldn't have been a bad deal now. But I found myself, his newsletter was late a couple times, and I found myself disenchanted with it, and I subscribed to his newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that your newsletter, you know, your show and your newsletter is... quite worth supporting.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay,
I do appreciate
it. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. 623-444-5889, and I'll start taking some more calls as soon as we get back from this break. But I hope you see that you can call and disagree with me and state your case. I don't eat people. I appreciate you expressing yourself. We'll be back right after this. The mic didn't come on. The light was on, but no one was home. The mic didn't come on, but now it's there. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. It's open line live tonight. Let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is John.
Hello, John.
How you doing?
Good. Where are you calling from?
San Diego.
All right, John, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm going to kind of jump across here and talk about something different.
Okay.
As of this year, my son and I was going to San Diego and take a picture of the comic convention here in San Diego. And during our travel, my son had a camera, and he took a picture of this hotel called the Omni Hotel. And it's a very nice hotel. It's right across the street from the convention hall.
Mm-hmm.
And when I developed it, this is going to sound wild, but this bright, intense light shows in my film here. And I haven't said nothing to nobody about this. And this little tiny one's following it.
I didn't understand. This little what?
Little tiny craft. I don't know. Stars craft. I don't know what they call them, okay?
Okay.
But it shows in this film that I have, that I developed. Now, I don't know. I hear so much stories about you have to have a digital camera. You got to have a certain kind of camera to make it official or whatever. I'm not familiar with that. All I know is that my son took a picture, and it's a bright, I don't know, white, shining, because the sun was hitting it, and it's, like, spinning. It sounds bizarre, but the film looks like this thing is spinning still on the film, picture film.
Hmm. So what do you think it is?
Well, you know, I hear a lot of stories about UFOs. Maybe that's it. I hear a lot of bright, shining objects showing up. And you also mentioned earlier that that NASA had shown a tape or something that had shiny lights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'd like to send this to you. Maybe if you can analyze it for me.
Well, I'll do what I can with it. Look, I'm not a photo analyst. But I can do a few things with it, you know, change the contrast and change the sharpness and balance and stuff, and see if we can, you know, get it, you know, as sharp as we can get it. But sure, you can send it to me. Now, let me ask you this: are you a member?
No, I'm not.
If you if you join,
I don't know what happened, but I guess I got switched off or something. I'm not sure.
Okay, if you join the members area,
yeah,
you have a photo gallery, your own photo gallery, and you can upload it to your photo gallery, and then everybody can see it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I said, and then you know, all the whole members area then can see it, and amongst them will be some who are photo analysts that can do something with that. But sure, you can go ahead and send it to me, and I'll do what I can with it.
Yeah, well, the problem is my Hewlett Packard copy machine doesn't work well right now with my Toshiba laptop.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't want to transfer the film into the laptop, and I'm having all kinds of problems with that.
You can take it. You can take your.
Send you this copy.
Okay, you can take it down to like Walmart or Walgreens or you know. And they can digitize it for you and save it for you.
They can what now?
They can digitize it. They can turn it into a digital photograph, and then you can just email it.
Email it to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I hope I can do that. I'm trying to do my best to hand it over to you. And I copied a bunch of it, and I just want to make sure that what you're looking at is what I'm looking at, you know? And just a bright, intense light. And it looks like it's spinning.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a look at it long enough, it looks like it's still spinning, but I may be wrong about that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll send it on, and like I say, I'll do what I can with it.
Great. I appreciate it.
All right, John, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right. Okay. Let's BYOT, that's Bring Your Own Topic Night, and we've got a couple of flash messages here that I want to get to. Let's see, this one is from Thailand, from Nick in Thailand. Kevin, anything new about the Bosnian pyramids? Nick, no. I'm sorry. I don't have any new information on that, and I wish I did, but I don't. The latest information we have was several weeks ago when we had Dr. Osmanagic on the show with us, the guy that discovered the Bosnian pyramids. So you might want to check our archives, the K-Pods, and that's the latest information we have. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Tony from Denver.
Hello, Tony.
Hi, Kevin. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
I got two quick questions for you, Kevin.
Okay.
Do you think the UFOs seen over the Fukushima nuclear power plant are trying to clean up the mess?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. The second one I have is, do you think that there has been a lot less media coverage of what is going on over the Fukushima plant because the world doesn't want to accidentally show any live footage of the spaceships over the Fukushima plant, like what happened to the German broadcast this week?
Well, you know, that very well could be the case. We're obviously not seeing very much live footage from there. And so that could be the case. Now, there's a really curious shot, a really good shot from Japanese news, Japanese television, and you may have seen it, a large cylindrical object flies right over that plant. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that's the one I'm referring to, the mm-hmm. Germany broadcast from a Japanese news broadcast, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, well, that's pretty pretty definitive, I think, and pretty curious. So it could be that that may be exactly why we're not seeing much live footage out of there, because perhaps they don't want us seeing those things.
Especially live footage, what happens to NASA all the time.
Yeah, you know, I come down pretty hard on NASA on some things, but they are worthy of praise on other things. And I don't want to forget that. They do a lot of things that are very positive and very good, and I am for NASA. I'm just for all of this nonsense to stop. You know, here's the deal. You know, I mentioned, Tony, those photographs from the moon where they airbrushed out stuff. I don't care if they provide those photographs and there's nothing exotic there, you know, let's say they provide the photographs without the airbrushing and there's nothing exotic. That's okay. I don't care. I just don't want the stuff tampered with. I don't want them to monkey around with it. Just give it to us like it is and let us see what is there. And there's no reason not to do that, in my opinion. But I tell you what, I think NASA has done some fantastic work over the years, and what they have done, that where they've been straight with us, and where there have been especially technological developments that have trickled out into society and we're using them, man, these folks have done marvelous things, and they ought to be applauded for it. But I think it's time now to shift gears, double their budget, tell them stop trying to fool the people on anything, and let's get on with this. Let's just get out there and get this done.
You'd still want to double their budget even if they keep sending all our spaceships to museums and not replacing them with anything?
If their budget was straight, they wouldn't have had to do that. They would have been able to replace it. Their budget.
Yeah.
Think about this. 18.5 billion dollars to explore the universe. The universe. 18.5 billion. How much did we give the bankers?
A couple trillion.
There's my point. That's my point. I'm for NASA. I really am. And where, you know, it probably sounds like, because I, the stuff I do come down on, I come down on it pretty hard. And it probably gives the impression that I am anti-NASA. Man, I'm not. I am pro-NASA. But these things that I come down on, I come down on them because I think these are places where NASA needs to, shall we say, improve.
I used to be a big fan of NASA as well, Kevin, until I learned that they faked the moon landings, and then I was kind of teed off at them.
So you're totally convinced that we never went to the moon?
Oh, yeah. That Marcus Allen over there that writes, for the UK magazine,
mm-hmm.
and that Bart Sabrell you've had on the show in the past, mm-hmm. they've got me convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt. I'm not an Apollo hugger.
Well, I'm not an Apollo hugger either.
I grew up that way.
But, you know, I think it's entirely possible that what we saw, I think that's possible that was all done on studio sets and so forth. But I think it's also possible that that's what we saw, and they went out there and did the real thing and saw the real thing, and it got classified, and we never saw it. I think that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, Kevin, thanks for all your hard work this week, and we'll be back here next week to listen to a whole new week of shows.
All right. Be sure you catch that special broadcast tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Sometimes... when we talk about issues, look, there's not just one way to look at things. Now, I'll give you an example. I've stated my case tonight about can you fly the airplane on Mars? I've stated it before. Scott stated his. Now, neither one of us may be right. We both might be wrong. There may be a whole different way to look at it. You know, look, we live in a culture here, especially in America, where with talk radio especially, everything is dogmatic and everything is the host says it's this way. Well, I think that's one of the ills of the country. Actually, I really do. I will tell you what my opinion is about stuff. And that's my opinion about the Mars airplane. That's my opinion. And it's based on some things that I think are accurate. Scott told you his opinion. And based on things, he thinks it's accurate. And I don't hold any ill will towards him. And I don't think he's wrong. I think maybe he hasn't considered all of the evidence that I looked at. He feels the same way about his evidence. And maybe I haven't considered everything he's looked at. And the fact is, we may both be wrong. There may be a whole different way to look at it. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. It is Open Line Live tonight. I want to get to a flash message. And this is from Italy, from Flavio in Italy. Great show. I'm surprised nobody talks about Saturn, the god of the Illuminati. What do you think its importance is? Okay, I'm going to take each of these as we get to them. Flavio, I don't know. That's not something that I have looked into a lot. So I'm not really sure what I think about that. Honest answer. Also, do you believe ants, if they could think, would think of themselves as being in the image of their God, as we do? I'm not sure they don't think. We think they don't think. But look at the amazing society they build and the amazing industry that they are up to throughout their lives. We think they don't think. It might be amazing to us to learn, if they do think, what they think, how they think. Do they think of themselves as in the image of their God as we do? I don't know. Possibly. As far as Mars, I think it's a distraction by the powers that be, so we forget about Tyche, and other heavenly objects. You could be right about that. I think Mars is a great distraction. It was true last year, and I would have to look at the numbers to see if it's true now. But as of 2010, we had flown more missions, we humans, not just NASA, but all space agencies involved, have flown more missions to Venus than we have to Mars. So Mars might be a distraction. That is something I brought up as a possibility in Venus. Watch the other hand. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mary, and I'm in Houston.
Welcome back, Mary. Ladies and gentlemen, Mary has been ill for a couple of weeks. She's back, and I'm glad. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm the one that sent you the URL about the FBI records, the vault.
Uh-huh.
And this is sort of off the UFO topic, but
that's okay.
Still in that genre. In the vault, it has a section named the Unexplained Phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just too much for me to read right now and really absorb it. But I got drawn to the section where it said extrasensory perception.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just blown away that the file that they have listed is for 1957.
Uh-huh.
But they had actually been researching the people who they believe of interest before then, and they actually interviewed them and actually put them through several tests.
Yeah.
And this was back in 57. I thought it had been my opinion about the remote viewing program was sort of up in the air because a lot of it was just totally outside the box. But this article has really made up my mind that it actually exists.
Yeah, the remote viewing program that the federal government had going, and ostensibly they closed it, although there are people that say it's still operating but under a different name and under different administration now. It's, you know, it's some other agency running it. But it was called Stargate, and it went public. It became public knowledge, I believe, in 1997. I think that's when it became public knowledge. And it was on television. They were reporting on it. There was a documentary about it. Yeah, it's very real. Very real. You know who Jerry Wills is?
Yes.
Jerry Wills is a friend of Ingo Swann. They studied Ingo Swann in order to figure out how they could teach those principles or teach those skills to other people. He was the person, maybe there were others, but certainly he was one of the people, and I think the person, that they studied to figure out what he does, how he does it, and they took parts of that to teach to other people, and that became the remote viewing program, or Stargate.
Yeah, I can actually believe that. The article that I'm reading that's on the FBI website, they, I guess these are pseudonym names, but they mention this particular man that they observed and a young teenager, and these two people were able to read documents that were inside of books or completely covered or when they were completely blindfolded. And I was just blown away by the government's entrance, the way they stated that if they could harness this ability, that this would be the most valuable asset to the U.S. government that they could think of. Mm-hmm. And this was back in 1957.
Mm-hmm.
And though they have a lot of lines redacted, I noticed they implemented, well, in if you read it that way, they implemented a major program searching for people of these abilities. And the first guy they interviewed, they wanted him to give them the secret of how he was able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Or could he teach it? And I thought that was just absolutely, you know, that's just out there.
Uh-huh. Well, imagine if they could fully develop this, and maybe they have. They no longer have to go get a warrant to search your house. They no longer have to get a warrant to wiretap you. And, of course, currently, they pretty much don't have to anyway. They just do what they want to do. But with our Constitution, they are supposed to have to get a warrant to search your house, to read your documents. But with this program, they could do it without ever coming onto your property.
Yeah, and unless you had ESP, you would have never known that it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty ominous, yeah. Isn't it? Pretty ominous.
Yes.
But it also, you know, in terms of doing psychic spying on other nations, you wouldn't have to send any operatives into the other nation, and you know, you could do your spying without putting people on the ground there. And the Soviet Union was really into this. They were really doing it and really into it. And my understanding is that's the reason the U.S. government got really into it, when they found out the Soviets were doing it.
Yes. It sort of puts a cap on it. I remember this sci-fi movie called The Minority Report.
Oh, yeah.
Where they sort of looked into the future to see whether you were going to commit a crime, and they would arrest you before you even did it.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of brings home, you know, your civil liberties and your rights as an individual, and how easily, you know, just for the sake of you want to be secure and safe, you give up so much for the scare of it.
Mm-hmm.
When maybe that is not totally the reality.
You're exactly right. I wish we had more time, but we don't. The end of the show is up on us. Mary, thank you for the call. Good to hear from you again. I'm glad you're doing better. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. I wish we had more, but we don't. And that means that it's time for me to say that's a wrap for this evening. That's a wrap for this week. And we've got more great stuff coming your way next week. Be sure you catch the special broadcast tomorrow morning in the members area. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.